This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. 25 years ago, Tim O'Brien fought in Vietnam. Earlier this year, he returned there for the first time. He had already returned many times in his books. O'Brien is the author of several acclaimed war novels, including Going After Cacciato, which won a National Book Award, and The Things They Carried, which was recently described in the New York Times as one of the finest books, fact or fiction, written about the Vietnam War. O'Brien's new novel, In the Lake of the Woods, is set in the present, but it's haunted by the past. The main character, John Wade, has just lost a bid for the Senate because his opponent revealed that Wade participated in the My Lai massacre, in which a whole village was slaughtered by American soldiers. The revelation forces Wade to remember deeds he even kept secret from himself. I asked Tim O'Brien why he brought the My Lai massacre into his new novel.
Partly, I want to try to integrate the Vietnam experience into the larger experience of America and life as it's led after the war by my character John Wade. Secondly, I served as a soldier myself in the My Lai area about a year after the massacre occurred. I walked the same ground that Charlie Company had walked, including, you know, going through the village of My Lai 4, so it was called. The horror of the war, I suppose, was, at least in my own experience, was largely attached to that area around Pinkville, the area we called Pinkville, where the My Lai village is located. And 25 years later, that horror is still with me.
So you were in the area of My Lai about a year after the massacre. How do you think that the memories of the My Lai massacre affected the Vietnamese perceptions of you as an American soldier?
Oh, it was. We were despised. You could see the hostility. It was just shining or glowing out of the eyes of the Vietnamese in the villages in and around My Lai. We had no knowledge of the massacre, but we knew the place was just dreadful to operate in. We took casualty after casualty after casualty, landmines and snipers. The hostility was incredible, and when we found out about the massacre about halfway into my tour, suddenly things crystallized, and we realized why we were so hated in that area. Most places there was a kind of indifference, you know, that was you could detect in the eyes of the Vietnamese, but not so in the villages in and around My Lai 4.
Must have been quite an occasion for introspection about your own participation in the war.
Yeah, I mean, like my character in the book, I went to the war unwillingly. I went essentially for reasons of love. I didn't want to lose the respect of my hometown and my family and my country. And I suppose that that's a big part of why the My Lai incident takes part, you know, is embedded in this novel, that we as human beings do bad things oftentimes in the name of love or for love. My character certainly does, and I certainly did. I went to a war I thought was wrong, going essentially for reasons of love, odd as it may sound.
Well, you even said that, I don't know that you put it exactly this way, but your participation in the war to you now almost reads like an act of cowardice, because you went for love, and then you didn't want to fight, and you thought of going AWOL, and you didn't have the will to do it. You think in a way that if you were a stronger person, you would have found a way to get out.
That's right. I mean, these things are based, of course, on the beliefs one has. But if you believe, as I did, that the war in Vietnam was an ill-conceived war, your actions ought to somehow reflect your conscience, and mine didn't. I, as a 21, 22-year-old kid, couldn't summon up the courage to go to jail or go to Canada, whatever it would have taken to say no to that war. Instead, I was responding to that incredible love craving inside me. I just needed to be loved so badly by my hometown and country and family. And I think it was that force, at least in my case, but I think in a lot of other cases too, that pushed men into that war.
When did you start seeing it that way?
I saw it that way then.
Oh, really?
I saw it that way my whole life, yeah.
There's a passage I'd like to have you read from your new novel, In the Lake of the Woods. And this is one of the kind of pivotal flashback sections in which your main character, John Wade, is remembering the massacre.
In the months and years ahead, John Wade would remember Thuan Yen the way chemical nightmares are remembered. Impossible combinations, impossible events. And over time, the impossibility itself would become the richest and deepest and most profound memory. This could not have happened, therefore it did not. Already he felt better. Tracer rounds corkscrewed through the glare, and people were dying in long, neat rows. The sunlight was in his blood. He would both remember and not remember a fleet human movement off to his left. He would not remember squealing. He would not remember raising his weapon, nor rolling away from the bamboo fence, but he would remember forever how he turned and shot down an old man with a wispy beard and wire glasses and what looked to be a rifle. It was not a rifle. It was a small wooden hoe. The hoe he would always remember. In the ordinary hours after the war, at the breakfast table or in the babble of some dreary statehouse hearing, John Wade would sometimes look up to see the wooden hoe spinning like a baton in the morning sunlight. He would see the old man shuffling past the bamboo fence, the skinny legs, the erect posture and the wire glasses, the hoe suddenly sailing up high and doing its quick twinkling spin and coming down uncaught.
Your character sees the old man with the hoe coming at him and thinks it's a rifle and shoots him, and even though he later realizes it was a hoe, he has to remember it as a man coming at him with a rifle. It's like the only way he's physically capable of...
Yeah, that plus a razor in general, that, you know, when this happens in my own life, that after 25 years, the human being survives, I think, after a horror like that through the quality of just erasing history, mm-hmm. trying to forget it, pushing it aside. And the events of 25 years ago come back to haunt me as they come back to haunt my character, only in little moments at night or while reading a newspaper or in dreams. And we reprocess the horror in little packets that then pop out and sometimes bite us, and oftentimes bite us very badly, as John Wade himself is bitten. He tries to hide his participation in the My Lai massacre from everybody, from his wife, and becomes a politician, and from the electorate. But you can't hide a thing like that forever, and you certainly can't hide it from yourself forever. And once the secrets of our lives are out, they can really hurt us, as I've learned myself.
How did you learn that?
Lots of different sorts of ways. One way is I've never been able to talk with anyone, and I've never written about some of the events that occurred during my own tour in Vietnam. But, you know, this book really has, in a way, has very little to do with Vietnam. It has to do with, I think of it mostly as a story about deceit and deception and guarding our pasts.
You know, as a writer, I'm surprised you're still able to keep secrets. You've written so much that's set in the war, and that seems so personal, it's almost hard for me to imagine there's stuff you haven't told us yet, you know?
there's a private life a writer leads and a public life, mm-hmm. and the goal of my goal as a writer is to tell a story, essentially, and then to give pleasure to readers and to try to make it into a kind of art, to salvage something out of all the wreckage that is my life, you know, the life of Vietnam, but the life afterward. And in the Lake of the Woods is meant to be an artifact that'll sit on a library shelf, and 150 years from now, some 19-year-old kid or some 40-year-old woman in Sioux City, Iowa, will pick it up and feel some, have the heart squeezed in good ways and disturbing ways and funny ways. And that's the purpose, I guess, of art, for me in any case, is to give pleasure to readers, to squeeze the heart, and to salvage something from the horror that was and is my life.
You still think of your life as a horror?
Yeah, I do. I wrote a piece for the New York Times Magazine that was published in early October of 1994, and... Though I don't get into any detail about my private life, the foundations that I thought were, you know, very secure in my life were suddenly pulled out from beneath me. This is 25 years after Vietnam. Going through a divorce that's just terrible. I'm living in limbo, essentially. I feel a little bit like John Wayne at the end of my novel, this man whose marriage is not really collapsed, but sort of dissolved, sort of sailing away into the wilderness. And that's the feel I have in my own life.
You know, I read that New York Times article. I really liked it a lot. And in your article, you sound almost suicidally depressed. And I was thinking it almost seemed like too fresh a wound to be writing about. I think so often for writers who are writing about very personal things, particularly painful things, there's a little bit of distance between the awful event and the telling of the event. It seems like there's very little mm-hmm. distance in the case of this particular article.
Well, yeah, in a way that's true, but, you know, pain in life is always present, no matter, I mean, time has very little to do with it. That as a writer, I think I'm able to concentrate on, when I'm writing fiction, on story and on technical issues and on what it is that makes a reader turn a page, that kind of what next quality. I mean, In the Lake of the Woods is essentially a story about a missing person. And there, I had enough sense in writing the book to put my personal life aside and to write a story about what happened to this man's wife and to keep us that sense of mystery alive. If I had simply fallen into a kind of a collage of self-pity and description of my own problems, that would have been one matter. But I've been writing for so long now that I think I'm able to, when I'm at the computer, separate life, as I'm leading it, from the page. In a way, you know, I find refuge in the page. I find refuge in objectifying and turning, you know, a bad life into a good novel.
Something I learned about you in the article we're talking about is that you've been treated for depression for several years. Mm-hmm. And I kept wondering, you know, do you think that's something that's in your nature? Or do you think of the depression as an after effect of the war? And is there any way of knowing?
Well, you know, I think depression is partly, you know, biological. It has to do with the chemistry of the brain. But I also have learned through all the years of dealing with it that it has to do also with history, the life of the child and the life of the young man and the life of the now middle-aged, you know, author. There's a mixture of chemistry and life. In my own case, as in the case of John Wade, I had a childhood and where I felt lonely and abandoned and chubby and friendless, just as my character does. And like my character, I turned to the hobby of magic. I remember visiting Lou Tannen's magic store in New York as maybe an 8-year-old kid and being so excited with my catalogs to buy tricks that I would then bring to my basement back in Minnesota and spend hours and hours just manipulating the world, making oranges turn into mice and making silk scarves vanish and things like this, where I felt a kind of control over the world, the way my character, John Wade, somehow finds a sense of security through doing tricks.
So you think that depression is partly in your nature, that you channeled
partly
it into
so.
Magic and stuff when you were young, and you always
felt
kind of isolated.
And then magic turns into story writing.
Right, right.
You know, where you can perform little miracles in your stories.
My guest is novelist Tim O'Brien. His new novel is called In the Lake of the Woods. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with novelist Tim O'Brien. This might sound dumb to you, and of course I was never in a war, but I've often thought, you know, that if you were fighting in a war and your life was on the line every day, if you'd be able to accept that someone in a comfortable home, in a safe place, could manage to be so miserable that they'd even think of taking their own life. And, you know, I guess I'm wondering if you ever thought it would, when you were fighting, if you ever thought that it would be possible to be so unhappy when you were safe.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one that has occurred to me very recently. Back 25 years ago, my main objective on this planet was to stay alive, to draw the next breath, to do anything for life, duck behind paddy dikes, anything to stay alive. And then 25 years later, I find myself alone looking at some yellow pills, wondering if I should swallow them or not. The two drives are so contradictory, so at such opposite extremes, that I wonder how I got from the point of a man, a young man of 21 who just wants to live and nothing else, to the point of a 48-year-old up at 4:30 in the morning watching the clock, wondering if the phone might ring, everything gone from his life, wondering whether to take those pills or not. Well, I'm beyond that now, but at the time, the mystery of how I got from where I was at one point to where I was at another point was confounding and will always remain a mystery to me in some ways.
Do you ever feel that you somehow the war should leave you the kind of person who can always appreciate the small pleasures of life and never take anything for granted again and so on?
No, I don't think so. You know, the human memory is short. Once, you know, it's even sitting here in the studio, it's hard to believe I even was in a war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of the novel I wrote, and, you know, as much as we've talked about it, it's essentially is a love story. And the 25 years since Vietnam, I've lived as a person who's, you know, like John Wade, my character, whose interests are not in the past and not in Vietnam. They're shaped by it, but my interests are in having a good life, a happy life, trying to give, you know, write good books and so on. And Vietnam feels right now like ancient, ancient history. It's hard to see the connection, even though I know it's there.
Vietnam still doesn't seem to be over for you as a writer.
No, it's like blackness being over for Toni Morrison, or, you know, the Kings being over for Shakespeare. It's just not over. How can it be? Life presents us with material, and I know I'm not really obsessed by Vietnam in any sense, but I find good stories in it. The story, I mean, if you think about it, you know, there are out there in the world, there are 115 human beings or 110 or so who took part in the My Lai massacre, and we know the names of one, two, three, or four of them. The rest of them are still out there. What are they telling their children and wives and husbands and mothers and so on? What are they telling their friends? How much are they keeping secret? How are they tricking up their lives? And I'm mostly curious about what's going on in the present day world. I'm not too interested in Vietnam itself. I'm interested in what secrecy has and deception and trickery, what that does to the human relationship, the human heart.
Do you find that depression is your muse or your enemy as a writer?
It's both. It's my enemy in the sense that when it gets to the point where I find myself standing and staring at a computer but not seeing words or not seeing images behind the words, it's an enemy. There are other times, though, in the writing of this book and in creating these characters where it's my best friend. I think every book, whether it's a comic book or a book full of tragedy and hurt, every great piece of art, I think, has its deepest roots in suffering of some sort or another. That's where humor comes from, and that's where the humorous episodes in this book come from, and also that's where the tragic elements come from. It has to do with the suffering of the human heart, the desire for happiness in the face of unhappiness. And so in that sense, depression is my friend.
Do you ever take medication for depression?
Oh, yeah. I'm loaded up right now. You should see my eyeballs. Yeah, I do. I've been on medications for years.
Does it affect your writing?
No, it doesn't seem to affect much of anything. I really don't notice much change. I think maybe in a way this stuff may be a bit overrated.
The pills?
Yeah, it's a relative of Prozac I'm on. And it doesn't do much at all that I can. Life itself has a much more impact. If I talk to a nice person, I feel nice. If I get a nasty phone call in the middle of the night, I feel nasty or hurt. And life itself is, I think, is what is more important in terms of my register of being.
Was your trip earlier this year back to Vietnam, your first trip back there?
Yes, it was.
Were you surprised by any of your reactions?
No, I can't say I was really surprised, Terry. I felt good when the trip was over. I felt a kind of, I can't say that the trip banished bad memories and bad images. It did not do that. But now, if I were to close my eyes, living alongside those bad images are very peaceful and very beautiful images. I'm remembering a particular rice paddy that 25 years ago was just boiling with machine gun fire and rocket-propelled grenades and amputations and death. And then if I close my eyes again, I'll see that same rice paddy as it is now, the sunlight, gold on a water buffalo, a peasant walking across the paddy. So gorgeous and so serene and so ancient and so beautiful. Now, at least, there's some beauty to live alongside the horror. I'm very glad I made the trip.
Is that going to be helpful to you in the middle of the night sometime when you can't sleep?
Yeah, it already has been helpful. It already has been. I can feel it in my tone of voice. I'm not as frantic as I used to be. I've come to terms with a lot and don't even know how I did, except something changes inside the chemistry in my chest, and I feel a bit more peaceful.
Well, Tim O'Brien, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Tim O'Brien is the author of the new novel, In the Lake of the Woods. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.